I always hesitate to ask this because it can be kind of embarrassing. But let's try it anyway. What have we discussed thus far? Gene, you know this is where this is going, don't you? Is that why you're laughing? Because you don't remember. What have we discussed thus far? What has stood out in your mind? What points have we tried to emphasize in these last 8 and now this number 9 study of my church family? What have we talked about? Say again. That we need to get more acquainted. What have we talked about, Sue?
How strong the forces are to try to tear us away.
Okay. How strong the forces are that are trying to tear us away. What have we talked about the church family? Are you raising your hand, Grant?
Our responsibilities towards each other.
Our responsibilities towards each other. Tyrone, is that what you were going to say? Of course. You all think alike, I know. Darren?
Bearing each other's load.
Bearing each other's load. Not burying, that would be a different word. And I guess we could do that once but we have to bear it first and then help somebody bury it, I guess. But bearing, B-E-A-R-I-N-G, each other's load. What have we talked about, Cornelius?
Loving one another.
What does that mean? We give each other big slobbery kisses? Oh, that is not what that means. What does it mean? How do you love one another? How do you express that? Okay. All right, through communication, by your actions, by showing each other through your deeds. Is there another hand back here somewhere? Somebody said something, but I'm not hearing it. Encouraging each other. Respecting each other. Do we have a responsibility? We started this discussion on Sunday. Do we have a responsibility as a church family? Do we all have a responsibility towards our young people? Do all of us have that responsibility? Or is it only the parents? Do all of us have that responsibility, or is it only those deacons or others who are helping with them? Do all of us have the responsibility, or is it just those who are their age or close to their age? Who is it that has that responsibility, Gene? Do we have a responsibility to their parents? Yes, we do. Do we have a responsibility to one another? Do we get to define who that one another is? What have we said about the one another? In Christ, we're all one. Is that determined by our age? Is that determined by our financial status? Is that determined by our race? No. In Christ, we all become one. Do we have responsibilities towards each and every one of us? Romans chapter 12, verse 5 says we are members of who? Members of one another. We belong to each other. Now, if you are a male, a white male, in your 50s, are you only then responsible to white males in their 50s? Well, that'd be complicated, wouldn't it? Who are we responsible for? Who are we supposed to be looking out for? Who are we supposed to, all these things you've said, love one another, encourage one another, bear one another's burdens. Who is that? Is it only those who are like us? Well, no. It's all of us who are of like mind in Christ. So we said that there are some challenges that are involved in this. And we spent a lot of time on Sunday talking about the challenging dangers that our culture is bringing upon us today. Do you believe these challenges are real? Do you believe these dangers are real? Or are we in fairy tale land? Are we just in make believe? We're just saying, oh well, this is bad stuff because that's what you're supposed to say. Are we saying that the future is that the future, you know, looks uncertain because that's what we're supposed to say? Well, we heard our parents say it, now we're saying it because we heard them say it, and now we're the ones who are supposed to say it. Are we truly concerned about the dangers that our culture is not just bringing upon the culture at large, but upon those who are young? Is it true that our culture is constantly pulling at our young people? Is it true that our culture is doing all that it can to villainize parents? Is it true that our culture is one of the most formidable forces for forming, like all those F's, are the values of our kids? Is it true that our culture is not doing anything to help create critical thinking? Is it true that our culture is not helping our teens to grow into mature adults? Was it just within the last couple years that insurance plans allowed you to keep your children on as dependents for how long? To what age? 26. Wow. What does that say about our culture? Not what does that say about our kids, not what does that say about our young adults. What does that say about our culture's view of growing up and of maturing? We're going to do all we can to extend that. I don't know why. But they're doing what they can to extend that. And so here, at the same time, they're trying to isolate young people. They're trying to isolate them, villainize their parents, isolate them from their parents. Isolate them from mature adults. Isolate them from Christianity. Isolate them from the religion in which they were brought up. Culture is doing a lot to try to isolate our kids. Let's talk about some challenges that our families are facing. Not only in regards to all of this culture, but there are some challenging dynamics that our families are facing. And even if your family is not one that is going to be represented in some of this, your family is still affected and still influenced by these things, even if you don't see your family on this list at first. Are our families being influenced by the prevalence of divorce in our culture? Does that have any influence on our kids? Does divorce have any influence on the children of divorce? When parents divorce, does that have any impact on their children? Absolutely. Does it have impact on children who are not of divorced parents? Some of you have grown up in a world where that was just normal. Even if your parents never divorced, you grew up in a world where divorce was just as common as going through the drive-thru after school to get something to drink. It's just regular. Does that seep in to the hearts and minds? Does it have any impact on our families and on our kids? But as you look at this list of how divorce then brings about other dynamics in our families, I know some of our children, some of our young people who may spend 1 week or 1 weekend with one set of parents, and then they go and spend another week or another weekend with another set of parents. It's got to be hard. And I'm glad that there are some parents who are trying to make the best of those situations, but does that have an impact on kids? Does that have an impact even on their friends who might still be living with their mom and dad, but does it still have an impact even on them? We're not trying to look down on anyone who's in these conditions. But what we're trying to look at are some challenges that we are facing in trying to raise Christian young people. And trying to raise Christian young people to have a view of marriage that God has. Are they going to get that in school? Are they going to get the view of marriage that God has? Are they going to get that in the classroom? Are they going to get that from their peers? Are they going to get it from TV? Maybe the Disney Channel. Will the Disney Channel give them God's view of marriage? Where are they going to get that? They're not going to get it in any of those places. But then there's some other dynamics. Some of you have brought some aging parents, or in some cases, aging grandparents into the home. Great thing to do. Does that change the dynamic of how that family functions? Certainly does. Does poverty have an impact? You look at all of these things when you have mom and dad who are both working outside the home, which when you live in South Florida just seems to be of necessity to pay the bills. But when mom and dad both work outside the home and they both work outside the home full time, does that have any impact on the kids? Again, we're not trying to disparage or look down on anybody who's in these conditions. But what we're trying to say is, what is the church's responsibility to our young people? Do we have any responsibility to those young people who are in the church now more than ever? And I guess any generation would say this, and we feel confident we can say this today. Now more than ever, are Christian parents struggling at being Christian parents? Would you say that's true? Would you, maybe leaving off now, the now more than ever, and we could debate when was the worst time. Are Christian parents today struggling to be Christian parents? Where is the support network? 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, where's the support network for Christian parents to be Christian parents? Are Christian young people struggling to be Christian young people? Where's the support network? When you go to school, anybody go to school today? Every one of you skipped school today, didn't you? Shameful. When you go to school, what kind of Christian support network do you have at school? Where does that come into play? If you look at your list of friends on Facebook, how many of your, some of you hundreds, some of you thousands, of friends on Facebook, how many of them are within your Christian friend network of support for living right and doing right? Would you say it is the majority of your friends that offer that to you, or the minority? How many Christian families today are struggling to try to be Christian families? You look at these things, and here we are as a body of people. Here we are as the family of God. Do we have a responsibility to each other? Do we have a responsibility to our young people? Do we have a responsibility to our families? Do we have a responsibility to our parents? Was it Gene who said that? Do we have a responsibility to our young parents? I'm glad that Jason and Brandy are here. It's awfully fun learning to be parents, isn't it? Did y'all get the parents' manual when Kai was born? Have you been following that pretty close? Oh, it got lost in the mail. That's a ripoff when you're counting on that mail order stuff to come in. It's a fun experience, isn't it? There's your manual. How do you learn how to be a Christian parent? How does a Christian parent vary from just being a parent? You know, a parent, just a regular old, run-of-the-mill, peanut butter and jelly, regular old kind of parent, they have challenges, don't they? Just trying to keep their kid alive is a challenge. Even if you're not a Christian parent, if you're just a parent, there's challenges. But when you're a Christian parent, does that add extra challenges? Amen. Because now you're not only trying to keep your kid alive, you're trying to keep your kid alive for eternity. There's a greater picture. There's a greater burden. Do we have a responsibility towards each other? So we have these challenges that the culture brings. We have these challenges that we're just facing as families. And some of us, you know, we may feel like we have the perfect family, but inside we've got hurts. Inside we've got challenges nobody else knows about. So you bring all of this into the church. And are there going to be challenges even inside the church? Will there be challenges even with church youth programs? You know, church youth programs have developed over the last 50 to 60 years. You go back 60, 70, 80 years ago, and they didn't have youth groups. They didn't have youth programs like we would think of it. They didn't develop until about the middle of the last century is when they really started to get these seeds of growth started. But you look at how youth programs have developed over the years, and I'm thankful that churches have seen a need to do something for our kids. Have seen a need and a recognition that as a family, we need to do something for all of the family. That we need to take an emphasis upon everybody. But it's interesting that even in the church, has it happened that even in the church, young people have been isolated? And we talked about how they've been isolated in our culture. Have youth groups ever been isolated in the church? Has that ever happened? Jerry?
I'm thinking it's church.
Okay. So you go some places and they would have different, they'd have children worshiping different place, separated from their parents. Do we have, and not that this becomes, not that this is a horrible thing, but we have separate Bible classes, don't we? We have them sitting in a separate place, don't we? They have youth devotionals, youth activities. They have a youth calendar, and none of these things are bad. But have we done anything to isolate? Has the church at large done anything to isolate young people from the church itself? There are some who have done some writing on this, who have described the what has transpired with youth programs, that many of them have become what they call a one-eared Mickey Mouse. What does that mean? It means you've got the congregation, you've got the church, and yet out over on the side is the youth group. And they do their thing, they have their activities, they have their own schedule, and here's the church, and well, they're attached to it. They are connected to it. But in many ways, they're isolated. In many ways, they're separate from it. Could you see that? I'm not asking if that's the case here. I'm just asking in a general way. Could you see that to be true? Could you see that happen with some youth programs? That they could become a attached, but not necessarily a part of, or inside of, where they get attached to their youth group, they get attached to their youth program, but what happens when they graduate? What happens when they graduate from high school and therefore graduate from the youth group? If they do not have actual connections, if they do not feel that they are an actual part of the family, if they feel all along that they've been attached, they've been connected, but they were not actually a part of what was going, we're the youth group and we have our thing and all of that is great, and then they graduate. And many of them end up like this, without a single solitary thing connecting them to the family of God. Here's what's happened. And I'm not saying this is what has happened here. I'm just saying in a general way, here is what has happened with many what would be called successful youth programs. Here's what has transpired in some general ways. Many youth programs have achieved a strong commitment. Think about this, the difference here. They have achieved a strong commitment of the youth to the youth group. They get them strongly committed to being a part of the youth group, but there are some youth programs that have not followed that through to say that connection, that you are a part of not just a youth group, but that you need to have a commitment to Christ. Some youth groups have got them committed to coming to the youth group activities and to the youth group devotionals, and anytime there's something on the youth group calendar, they are there, but they have failed to make that greater connection. Could that be a problem? Some successful youth programs have provided wonderful, memorable youth group experiences. You talk to some kids who have gone to different churches, congregations where they've had great youth programs, and they can talk about all the great things that they did. And sometimes they get the great experiences of being in the group, but once they become an adult, sometimes they have not ignited that desire to continue to be a part of the church, although they might have some great memories. Some youth programs have worked at developing maturity as Christian teenagers, but they have fallen short in helping them to become mature Christian adults. Some have focused on just some short-term objectives, trying to build up the involvement and the participation in the group, but have missed some of the long-term goals. Some youth programs have turned Bible classes into game time. I'm thankful that that hasn't happened here. But you go to some, I've heard from some of our own teenagers who have gone visiting, been out of town, they visited other congregations, they go to their Bible class, and there's no need to have a Bible because they don't even talk about the Bible. They don't open the Bible, they don't use the Bible. They go in there and it's an opinion sharing session. You know, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? What do you think about that? And there's not a whole lot of faith that is developed. It's just a time to sit and talk. Well, if we're not using Bible classes to build faith, if the church doesn't use Bible classes to build faith, then what are we doing? Are we fulfilling the responsibility that we have to each other? Some put a lot of emphasis on the bells and whistles, the exciting part, and they lose sight of that which is the most important. Some do very little. And again, I'm not talking about here. I'm just talking about youth programs in general. Have done very little sometimes for the parents and the families themselves. In fact, sometimes parents are looked at as an intrusion into a youth group. We've got our youth program, but the last thing we need over here are parents. We've got the youth group, we've got 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders over here, and we've got some people working with them, but the last thing we need over here are any parents. Now, I understand some who would say that, say, well, the kids need a break. And some parents would say, the parents need a break. What's our long-term goal? What's our long-term goal? Not short-term. You think about how much of an influence in time, and measured in time, how much of an influence does the church have on its young people? Measured in time. How much does the church get to have an influence on kids? Very much. Not nearly as much as their families. Not nearly as much as their parents. If there are efforts that say we are going to separate. It's interesting some of the terminology that's been used to talk about parents and youth groups. And let me see if I didn't put this on the screen. Let me see if I can find some youth groups have looked at parents as obstacles, and they play the game of tag. Parents drop off the kids, and they don't return until the event is over. So basically, they drop the kids off at the event and say, tag, you're it. You're in charge of my kids for now and until I get back. So they play the game of tag. Some have played the game of hide and seek, where youth workers conduct work in a shroud of secrecy. They don't want the parents to know all that they're doing because, well, they don't want the parents' input. They don't want the parents to have any say. So some youth workers have played hide and seek and just, I'm not going to let the parents know what's going on. We're just going to get together and we're going to keep it that way. And similar to that, some of they say played the game of secret service, where maybe the youth worker, the people who are working with the youth are just intimidated, and so they try to work in secret because they think somebody might have a better idea. What's our long-term goal? What's our long-term goal? Do we have a responsibility towards each other as a church family? Here's the idea of having the kids dropped off. Is this true? Can there be a successful youth ministry that isolates teenagers from the Lord's church family? I want you to think about that concept. We've been talking for the last 8 classes that the church is our family. Well, what if as a family, and let's not even talk about a youth group right now. Let's talk about any segment of the church. Talk about any segment. You take any segment of the church, and if you isolate them, if you take them apart from the, here's the church family. And here's the church family, and out here are our shut-ins. You see, they're out here. Well, they're connected, you know. They're like that one-eared Mickey Mouse. They've got the connection, but they're not really a part of the family because, you know, they're older or they're shut in or they can't be here. And so they're not a part of us. They're just connected to us. How would that work? Can we say that we would successfully call them or any segment of the congregation? If we set them out as their own entity with their own agenda, their own calendar, their own activities, and they do their own thing, and there is very little, if any, connection back and forth, do we have a responsibility within the family of God to work together as the family of God to get to heaven? Is that not our goal? Here's an interesting statement, and I can't remember where I read this first. Can spiritual maturity, can that be developed? Can that be mass produced? Can you create spiritual maturity through mass production? We bring a group in and we have a group and we think that we will produce faith in them equally on a mass scale. Can we do that? Now, we have Bible classes, and that's the intent of some of our Bible classes, isn't it? To produce faith on a mass scale. Where is faith built the best and the quickest? We have a class like this, and here's 120 people in here. Is it possible that even if this were, as we normally have, an in-depth Bible study, is it possible that with 120 people in here that some would be having their faith built and some would not in the same place? Why is that? Individual. It's all individual. You go into the senior high, the junior high Bible class, and you get somebody up front teaching. Is it possible that some of the kids in those classes would be absorbing and learning and growing and some would not? How come? Same teacher, same room, same environment, same everything? What's the difference? Attitude. Family. Individuality. There's so many differences. So that's not to say that trying to produce faith on a mass scale is wrong, but if that's the only way that we go about encouraging, what if that was the only, what if on a mass scale, if that was the only way we tried to preach the gospel to the lost, was on a mass scale? The only way we're going to be successful, we're just going to blanket, we're going to spread it, and the only way we will ever try to reach the lost is on a mass scale of teaching. Well, you get the word out there, don't you? You get the message out there. But where does learning, where does faith, where does understanding, where does that begin to take root? Where does that begin to grow? When you're sitting there, eyeball to eyeball, one-on-one. Isn't that our responsibility? Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. Help them to have faith. Can we do that with each other as a whole? Can we do that with our youth program? Where we not only try to do it on a mass scale, but we try to have an influence with them one-on-one. Now, whose responsibility is that? Whose responsibility is it to have an influence one-on-one with the youth of this congregation? Think about that. Matthew. Richard, is that news to you? I mean, where'd that come from? Okay. Okay. So Matthew says, besides the influence of his parents, which is the way he started that, and then he disparaged the influence of his parents. So he said, besides their influence, and then he went on later to say, forget that first part. Ages 15 to 19 is when you didn't listen to him? Okay. So besides their influence, especially in 15 to 19, there were the other adults. Matthew says he would not be faithful today if it were not for the other adults in the church who took an interest in him to have a connection. Now, was that strictly and only as a part of the youth program? Or was there any of that outside the nebulous of the youth program? Were there any connections that took place outside of that? Now, Matthew, is it possible, and I don't know, I know Arkansas is a little bit different, but is it possible that some of those adults with whom you built a relationship and they had an influence on you, is it possible that they were parents of somebody else, or were these like non-parent people? Okay. So it's a mix. The majority of them were parents of other kids that had an influence on you. Maybe I shouldn't ask this. Is it possible that your parents, especially between 15 and 19, is it possible that your parents had an influence on some of the other kids when they couldn't have an influence on you?
I know they did.
You know they did. How does that work? I don't know if I want to know what was said. Do we have a responsibility? Now, why, and what Matthew is stating is not some isolated case. Have you seen that happen in this congregation? Where there are individuals who have had an influence, who have had an impact on young people, not because they've been asked to, not because they're a part of a program, not because they are leading some endeavor or some activity, but because of who they are and their nature of talking to others. Some of you could look back, some of you who have been a part of this congregation, Jerry, you could look back at individuals who had an influence on you years ago, Jeff, you could look back years ago and say, here's somebody, not my parent, not an elder, not a preacher, not somebody who, you know, they're an elder or preacher, they're supposed to be nice to you, you know? I mean, that's their job, and if they don't, they're going to hell. So they have to be nice to you. God told them to. And they have to try to have an influence on you and smile at you, and they have to give you candy and be nice to you because they're a preacher. But, you know, it's that other random church member who's not supposed to have to do that. It has an influence on you. When you grew up, did you ever have a church? Did you ever have a candy lady at the church? You think kids know who the candy lady is in church? Yeah. You know, I didn't even realize we had a candy lady for a while there, several years ago. But you know, I learned pretty quick. We did. I don't know why I didn't know about it. You know, nobody told me we had a candy lady, but the kids knew. Is that a relationship that somehow being, and hey, if it takes candy to build a relationship with a kid, you know, how inexpensive is that? You know, how easy is that? You go buy a bag of candy and you can have a relationship with, you know, you can build a friendship. What's the point? The point is, what is the responsibility that we have as God's children towards each other? We've got 10 minutes. I'm going to skip this real quick. See that? Gone. All right, here's three things that research, this isn't David's ideas. This is what research, some of you have read some of this research, that researchers, some of you know the name George Barna, who has what he calls the Barna Group that does a lot of research in the religious community, who has looked out and said, what is it, who is it, how is it that faith is being developed and nurtured and maintained in young people. And they have found the top three major influences in building and nurturing faith in kids. Number three is the culture. We've already talked about it. Number three on the list of those who influence the faith of children is the culture. Now, you think that's a positive influence or a negative influence? I'm not sure how often that would be positive. I can't even come up with an example right now. So here we have a very strong negative example of how faith is being developed or destroyed. But there are two other major influences in the life of a child in building their faith. What do you think is the number one above, far and above? It's not even close. The number one influence in the building of faith in the life of a child. It's the parents. I know the kids won't say that. I know young people will deny that as long as they can. My parents don't have any influence on me. But the research bears it out. That it is what happens in the home that is the number one influencer of kids in the development of their faith. And that works negatively too. Because there is a strong influence that takes place. Now, again, that can be a positive or that can be a negative. Now, let me say it this way. That's not true. I said that could be a positive or that could be a negative. The reality is, it is either positive or it is either negative. Not that it could be, it is. The influence of the development of faith in the heart of a child either is positive in the home or it is negative in the home. There's no way to be neutral there. In sociological studies, this I know kids hate to hear this, but it's the truth. Parents are the number one influence in the life of their teens. Even during that period between 15 and 19, they're still the number one. And I know there are other influences that come along, but none of them compare to that of the parents. And yet, how many parents, and I include in a plural pronoun here, how many of us are doing our jobs adequately? I think this first statistic is flawed, but I couldn't find it corrected anywhere. I don't think it's this high. But these statistics show only 34% of families eat one meal together each day. I don't believe it's that high. But even if it is that high, a third of American families eat one meal a day together. That means that you are not together for most of the rest of the day. That means there's some other influence out there. The average father spends 8 minutes a day with his children. 8 minutes. How many hours? 24 hours a day? 24 times 60? And the father is having eight. Couples, they find, are spending about 4 minutes a day of uninterrupted time. And that only 12% of families pray together. Here are parents, here are families, here's the home that has the greatest influence on the development of faith in children. And what are we doing with it? Parents, what are we doing? Richard? Together. The last one is in a family home where there's a husband, wife, and children, that in that home the average couple spends 4 minutes a day with husband, wife of uninterrupted time together to talk about the bills and whatever else, 4 minutes a day. How's that going to work for your marriage? How's that going to develop a godly home? 12% of families pray together. How often does your family pray together? Do you pray together every day? Here we are trying to fight the forces of the devil. Here we are trying to counter, and somebody made the comment on Sunday that it's not necessarily that we are fighting the culture today. The culture is fighting against, not necessarily we're fighting the culture. We're fighting the influences that are creating this negative culture, and obviously those are the influences of evil. We're fighting the devil. We are fighting the evil culture that's against us. How often are we going to the Almighty God, and praying to Him as a family? What are we doing to keep our eyes on the goal? Now, what can we do as a church family? What can we do as a church family to help each other? A lot of our kids, they don't have Christian parents. A lot of them didn't grow up in Christian homes. Some of them might have a Christian mom or a Christian dad, but they might not have both a Christian mom and a Christian dad. Think about the influence that God wants us to have in our homes, and it's just a part of God's design that parents are to have the greatest influence on their kids and the development of their character, the development of their spirituality. And in reality, it's not because the parents have sat down and taught their kids a lesson. The research has found it's not because the parents sit down and teach their children. That's necessary. But the kids have to see it lived out in front of them. You can teach with your words all day long, but if your children do not see Christianity lived out in front of them, what's the saying? Actions speak louder than words. You can have those verbal lessons all day long, but if they look at you and they see Christianity, it's kind of like a hobby. You know, you pick it up every once in a while and you play with it, but then you put it back down and you go about your other things. And then you'll come back to your hobby a little bit later and you'll play with Christianity for a little bit, but I got to go and do some other things, so I'm going to put that down. I might come back to it in a few days. If Christianity is nothing more than a hobby for your children, what do you think it will be for them when they grow up and they're on their own? How can we expect Christianity to be anything more to our children than what it is to us in their presence? In Deuteronomy chapter 6, look in Deuteronomy 6 and we'll close with this tonight. You all know this, The Jews call it the Shema of Deuteronomy chapter 6, starting about verse 4, going down through verse 9. Sometimes we've looked at this, and I know we often think when we see the word teach, we think about sitting down, you know, at a table. We think about sitting down across from each other. And when we look in verse 7 where it says, you teach this to your children, we think, well, that teaching is something that we do, and we do it verbally. But notice when he says to do it. He says, hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one God, in verse 4. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength, in verse 5. These words I command you, they're supposed to be in your heart first as parents, in verse 6. And then in verse 7, you are to teach them, in what way? Diligently, to your children. And when are the four times you teach this to them? Teach it to them to them diligently. When you... Are you all with me? When you do what? When you sit down, when you do what? Walk by the way. When you lie down, when you rise up. What does that mean? Does that mean every time you sit down, you're supposed to quote a verse? Did you do that? When you sit down in the car, got to quote a verse. When you sit down in the easy chair to watch the TV, you got to quote a verse. You sit down... Is that when you sit down, do you teach your children? When you're walking by the way, that's you're walking down the street. When you were walking in the building, when you walked by the their room to tell them it was time to leave, did you quote a verse? When you rise up, when you light, what does this mean? Is it verbal teaching? It's not dismissing verbal teaching, but it is about living it out in front of them. Every part of our day, everything we do and everything we say needs to reflect Christ. If we want our children to look like Jesus, remember, what's our ultimate goal? If we want our children to look like Jesus, guess what? We've got to look like Jesus. If they don't see their parents looking like Jesus, what's going to influence them to look like Jesus? And now, to broaden it and to close it for tonight, to bring it back to the church family. If they don't see their church family, if young people, and this is not just something that happens, in fact, it's something that needs to happen outside the church building. Can't be limited to inside of a church building. If we want our young people to look like Jesus, they need to see all of us looking like Jesus when we are outside of this. It's easy to look like Jesus when you're here, isn't it? Everybody else is looking like Jesus. Boy, I can blend right in and I can look like Jesus too. But what would happen if we got our young people out of this place with us and they saw Christ living in us? Christianity has to be real. If we want it to be real for them, we have a broader responsibility to each other.